Hello, everyone. I will add my thanks to Joan and Chris, first of all, for organizing Hemingwaves, which is just a legendary event every summer. I've been in Pittsburgh for 34 years, and Hemingwaves was one of the ways in the old days that one got the lay of the world around here. And it's always been poetry. Poetry has always been part of Pittsburgh, and I'm really so proud to be part of it. Thanks also to Anna, and through Anna to Ad and Jill and Halsey and White Whale Books, which is an important community resource and should not be treated the way it was recently. Buy books. I'm going to read five poems. I have my little notes. I've got my timer all queued up and everything. Let's see. The first poem is a poem that's a kind of invocation. I was trying to figure out what poems I wanted to read tonight. And so I chose poems that were somewhere between the exhaustion I kind of feel at the beginning, or maybe it's at the end of spring, and for the end of the term for those of us who teach, and sort of hopeful, resistant, I will resist despair kind of poems. So first, invocation. Also, I should apologize. If you hear snoring, it's not me. My dog is sleeping somewhere below me and he's old. Invocation. One. Someone said the sea, and I felt the ocean. Someone said it's over, and took my stutter. Buildings darkened, happiness barked a ways off. After that, silence. Two, not a lover trapped in the past forever. Look toward, straight ahead, as a fortune said once. Something's waiting breathlessly near the doorway. Elephant patience. Three. Found three apples suddenly where only onions had been earlier. Tearful, rustling. Three red apples where there was nothing ready. Edible. Ate them. Should have to keep remembering to plug the book. It came out a little bit before the pandemic, and then, of course, nothing happened. I think I've done three or four readings, which I am super grateful for. And actually, it's okay. It's a kind of quiet book. It's a book about the complications of having a body, I guess. I guess that's the broadest way I can say it. And the things that it won't let go of, and the things that won't let go of it. This is a dream poem. Try not. Anytime I say that, if somebody else said it, I'd be like, oh God, I'm going to have to dream poems. But it's a dream poem. This one's called Dream of the Wild Pig. One. He was supposed to be dead, my father, not at the old farmhouse, the big brick one our family built before the revolution. Around it, enormous lawns rustled with neglect. His breathing was hard, old, enormous. I knew I should have grabbed the mowers myself and simply done the mowing like a good son, like any simply practical person would have. But I just wanted him to go to sleep again. Two. When we drove by later in a huge Oldsmobile, I ducked down, seeing him out, frail, still coughing, fidgeting around where the lawn met the road. The big riding mower purred behind him as he put clippings in a large plastic bag. Even on his deathbed, I thought, he can't leave well enough alone. The large older woman who was driving me somewhere looked down at me. I'll explain later, I said. Three. Of course I never did. We were sitting outside at what was half picnic, half farmer's market, half town meeting. Everyone was eating. and either gossiping or listening. I turned to the woman on my left to tell her, yes, I was living here now, back from the big cities of the world, when I saw over her shoulder a boar with the horns of a steer running toward us. She stood up, but it knocked her down. Other women ran over to help her, leaving no one else to stop the danger. I grabbed some leftover rope, thin as curtain poles, and threw them over the pig's head. Its horns were gone by now, and with the rope on, the thing relaxed enough I could wrestle it down. And there was a kind of meanness in me I recognized. And suddenly, we were at a barbecue, and on the spit, the pig was pissing all over itself with fear, turning gold, then bronze, still alive, upside down. I wasn't afraid to kill it, I don't think. It wasn't that. It was how best to do it. The crowd gathered around. I had a knife. And here came the man who'd show me how to use it. Two poems for the body. I started writing about sort of neglected parts of the body or parts of the body that got bad, had bad reputations. This one is called Poem for the Soles of My Feet. Constantly in the dark, wrapped in cloth and tied down, blindfolded, like loaves of bread, like fresh fish, like hostages. Walked all day into dead ends, through loud traffic, through crowds, silences, water, gravel, hallways, full of hot cardamom, fennel, secret cigarettes, muffled laughter, until they are too tired to remember how to send blood up the columns of the legs, bring blood down upon themselves, sweating into their masks, stuffed into tiny cars, faces pressed into the heat of engines, the punch of brakes, the slamming of doors, the pop and shriek of locks, sudden pirouettes of happiness, how they shuffle beneath us, growing quietly, steadily desperate for the inexplicable tickles and kisses of love, the slipping free of covers to find another pair like themselves, blazing like coals in the 3 a.m. darkness and silence, and touching them with a tenderness that surprises even themselves, that they still have it in them after all this time, like the fish that wakes up in the pan and in its last second forgives its devourer everything that will come next. For the small hairs of my nose. Given the chance, I would go around apologizing for everything I do. Given half a chance, given even an opening, as if there were a sniper trained on me while I drive to work, as if a serial killer were following me and listening for evidence I beat my dog, as if everything depended on my tiniest attention, my not failing to register a shift in the wind. Morning's thumb and forefinger pick me up out of bed where I would otherwise lie in my various crusts. Light flickers around me, a flock of pigeons, the neighbor empties out bags of bread for. They startle, a plume of iridescent dust at the slightest sound. They circle the houses, then come back down to her tiny concrete patio, full of plastic flowers. It helps clean the air, she told me once. And the last poem is a spring poem for Pittsburgh. It's called The Equipage. It takes its title kind of from a Wallace Stevens poem, 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird. I just always love that word equipage, the idea of a carriage that sort of carrying you around in the world. So I stole it. The equipage. That there are bees in my azaleas, despite the news of hives collapsing, begin again. Branches of hot pink feathers, fistfuls of fluted champagne, each a barn door open for the horse's return, inside the smell of oats, of sugar waiting. Let winter be over, the careful tethering of hope. No room for tears among these shriners and their tiny circling vehicles. The bees are in the dresses of the desperate debutantes, hearing bells, imagining candles lit for Easter, each orange shrine a miracle. Meanwhile, a tiny map of Pittsburgh etching itself inside them, a dance to return with. Among the white and green pantaloons of the blueberry bushes, a nudge will open, a tongue will flash forward, so the oranges grow, the peach fuzz depends on, the cherries sing about before they harden. So during a time of war, the heart finds a strange mercy still, a tiny hat, a gold coat full of messages. Sunglassed, humming, their mouths complicated with pins, forks, kazoos, full of implements, these hungry priestesses imitate the bear that would eat them, that shakes them off, that steals their drunk. They rise to plumb the morning glories, to answer riddle with koan. Like tiny cattle, they bear the fleshy silks into, they beat the fleshy silks into batter. They fall upon them like rain, their transistors turned up full for the carrying on away. Begin again. Bring wheelbarrows for the hell of it. It rubs off. Bring the horses to harness. Unwrap the footmen. Thank you.